The cat totally out of the bag.
Welcome once again, everybody, to Blockbuster Mentality. Appreciate you tuning in. How's everybody doing? Hope you're having a good week, good weekend, last couple weeks. I know last time I said we're going to do weekly shows. That starts now. Weekly shows start now. Missed last week, but hey, gotta watch out for the mental health. You know, we get burnout sometimes. But before we get into this episode, make sure you're subscribed to us on iTunes. Rate, review us. That helps us out a lot. We'd really appreciate it. Today we have on frequent guest Jeff Snyder. I know it's like, oh, go away, Jeff. Like, but you know, he keeps emailing like, oh, hey, can I come on? It's like, all right, Jeff, fine, yes, I'll get you on. But nah, he's great. That he is always so willing to come on and talk movies. This time we talk The Insider, and his nickname is The In Snyder, film reporter with Collider. And yeah, we get into The Insider with Russell Crowe, Al Pacino, Christopher Plummer, and obviously directed by Michael Mann. We talk some Oscar predictions. We talked about the nominations, about who might be nominated, but we recorded it before the nominations actually came out. So if you hear us saying that, it's because, hey, it was recorded beforehand. But anyway, I know you're done hearing me talk. You want to hear Jeff, the Insider, talk about The Insider. But no, appreciate you guys tuning in. Hope you enjoy the show. Here is my conversation with Jeff Snyder on The Insider. Like I said, I haven't watched For Your Consideration yet, but what the hell is going on with Best Supporting Actress?
I think it's a bum category this year. I don't think anybody...
Is that the issue? It's just there's not much... There's, like, nothing to choose from?
What are we talking about? Giving fucking Borat's daughter an Oscar?
Like, I don't get that. I do not get that. And it seems like she's almost a front runner.
I get it more than the Amanda Seyfried talking Mank, where that's what I don't understand at all.
Yeah, that's true.
I thought the Grandma Minari was by far the best supporting actress.
That's what I was thinking too. Because the Golden Globe, who won that?
Oh, Jodie Foster.
Oh yeah.
Like, who has seen that movie? Like, that's a lot easier to get 90 Golden Globe people to see that movie than it is to get 9,000 Academy members.
Yeah, that's the issue. I mean, there's a huge difference there. And she's not even nominated for a SAG, so you got to think she's not going to be nominated for an Oscar. I mean, history would tell us that, and statistics would tell us she's not likely to get nominated, but who the hell knows? Because was she nominated for the BAFTA, Jodie Foster?
I have no idea. I never like think of like the BAFTAs unless there's like a huge contender that like...
Yeah.
Yeah, I like BAFTAs as influencing the Oscars too much, even though at least there is some overlap.
I honestly, I don't get the Borat's daughter thing.
I thought she was very good. It was a memorable comic performance in the way that Melissa McCarthy's was in Bridesmaids. But
right.
I mean, but what scares me is, you know, I thought that grandmother in Minari was by far the best. I thought the same thing about the grandmother in The Farewell, and not only did I think she was nominated.
So no, yeah.
Who knows what the hell they're going to do? You know, like, I don't get it.
Such a weird year. Because first year I haven't done a top 10 list of my favorite movies, just because I, first of all, haven't seen as many movies as I usually do, and second of all, I don't know, I just don't care. And
they're all becoming weird years.
They really are. It's just it's hard to get excited about it this year, especially just because I don't know, it's going to be on Zoom or whatever, and I don't know man. But hey, you know, that's why we talk about past movies, you know, talk about the good old days, our 90s flicks, our Michael Manns. Yeah. What was that?
These were the great old days, that's for sure.
That is for sure. Before, you know, we had the Borat's daughters getting wins and nominations. So who would you pick for best lead actress?
Oof. It's a tough call. You know, I want to say Carrie Mulligan, but the truth is, I think it was probably Frances McDormand again.
Are you saying that out of odds, or are you who do you think should
I
win?
I think Carrie Mulligan probably stands the best chance to win, but I think that for I would probably vote for Frances McDormand.
Yeah. Well, while we're at it, explain Nomadland to me, man. I love movies like that. I like movies that don't really have much of a plot. It's just kind of, you're just in the life of this person. I could not connect with this movie. Are you able to sell me on it?
I don't know that I could, especially if you've already given it a chance and it just didn't hit you. I understand why it might not, but I think it's a very personal kind of thing almost, whether or not you connect with that movie. I did.
Yeah.
I think it was like my sixth favorite movie of the year or something.
Okay.
Like I just like what Chloe Zhao's vibe is. Like, we're vibe between that and The Rider. I love Frances McDormand. I don't understand like the Oscar talk for David Strauss or Theron or anything. But I like seeing all those people that she connected with, like Swanky, and you know, there was another friend that she had, and then the guy who, you know, looks like a Santa Claus almost.
Yeah.
I just love the world that the director kind of put us down in, and I think Frances McDormand was an excellent guide through that kind of world.
No, definitely. I mean, when I say it didn't connect, I mean, obviously there's no denying how great she is, how effortless it is for her. So yeah, I mean, it's, yeah, I'm not shocked she got a nomination or is going to get a nomination. I think Vanessa Kirby deserves some recognition. That was,
she was excellent. She was really, really good in Pieces of a Woman. You know, on FYC, we basically said she's the vulnerable one right now, I think,
mm-hmm.
because I don't know how many people watch that movie.
Yeah.
You know, that movie was a tough sit. And I think that, you know, it does kind of peak in that first half an hour, which is, you know, a kind of tour de force for her in that first half hour.
Yeah. Most realistic labor scene I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And I've been through three of them. Not myself personally, my wife, but, you know, I've seen three of them.
But just back to Nomadland, I love the music. I love the cinematography.
Yeah, I'm going to give it another watch. I mean, you know, it all depends on the mood you're in and the setting and everything. Like, when you watch a film, like,
you have to be in the mood for that one. You can't just throw the screener on willy-nilly here.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, that's it's definitely one I want to revisit just because it's getting so much buzz, and I'm just like, all right, let me try this out again.
What would you rather have win Best Picture this year? That like would actually like be this is a deserving Best Picture that 10 years, you know, down the line, you're going to look back and say, good call.
Oh man. First of all, I mean, it's never going to happen, but I loved Sound of Metal.
To me, that was far and away the best movie of the year. That's the only movie that can really compete with Nomadland in my mind. But I just don't think that the Academy voters are going to go for that.
Yeah, there's no way it's winning. Right. And I really hope Paul Racy, the guy who plays Joe in the movie. I really hope he gets at least a nomination for supporting actor, because yeah, he was fantastic.
Back in the day, you'd see actors like him actually win the Oscar, you know, sort of like actors who time has since forgotten because they only played that one role that they were so perfect for, whatever it is.
Right.
I think this is one of those. But these days, you know, it's just so much about the campaign and celebrity and like,
right,
who's due for it. And he doesn't. He almost can't win.
Yeah, because it's like, oh, who's this guy? Who's this? Do I check out Sound of Metal to vote for it, or
publicist or whatever it is?
Yeah, exactly. And speaking of which, I tried to reach out to him for the show, so we'll see. I had to reach out to him directly, so we'll see.
To deal with.
What was that?
Those are the best people to deal with. That his DMs are open. I think I sent him a DM that night that I saw Sound of Metal. It was just like, man, I was blown away by your performance.
Yeah,
like, congratulations.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, that movie definitely stuck with me, and definitely deserves more recognition. But you know, to actually answer your question, I liked Minari. I could see that winning. I don't think it will, but if I were to choose, I mean, I obviously liked it better than Nomadland as of now without seeing Nomadland again, but Minari, and I mean, Promising Young Woman, it's a fun watch, I think. Not fun, it's, you know, kind of deep, but like it's entertaining and it's keeps you on the edge of your seat.
I really like Promising Young Woman. I just think that would be like a weird Best Picture win.
Yeah. Same here. Yeah. I mean, Nomadland, I guess, fits the Best Picture, the historical. But honestly, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if Trial of Chicago 7 wins it. Kind of a Green Book situation, you know, just the, you know, the cookie cutter choice.
I'm going to take this as an opportunity to segue to our topic tonight.
Please do.
Because this was a movie, The Insider, that was famously sort of snubbed. It didn't win any Oscars. It was nominated for like 7, I think.
Yes. Pulled up. Yes, 7 Oscars. 7,
right. But nobody won anything, which is a damn shame because, like, looking back on it, even though I do remember like putting American Beauty as my number one movie of the year, I don't think American Beauty has held up nearly as well as this movie, The Insider, does. And that's, I'm not just saying that because of the Kevin Spacey stuff. Like, I have no problem whatsoever watching a Kevin Spacey movie these days.
Yeah.
But I just think that The Insider is the superior movie. And it's just so, I can't, like, you would think that the Academy would go for this. And I was kind of surprised that it didn't win anything. Cause that's the first thing. I showed it to my dad. He'd never seen it before, or he said that he'd seen it, but he didn't remember a goddamn thing about it. Right out of the movie, he's like, how did this not win any Oscars? And I have no idea.
Yeah, that's the same thing. Like, if it came out today, it would be like, the total buzz. I think, it's aged better than American Beauty, even though if I rewatch American Beauty, like I do every couple of years, it's, you know, still just, I'm enthralled by it and, you know, captivated. It's
a great movie.
Yeah, absolutely. And this one, I mean, it seems like it aged better and kind of got better over time and became more relevant with all the scandals, but, you know, just the news stuff, you know, that comes out, the controlling of the news and, you know, big corporations getting in the way of things. So, yeah, it definitely is timely.
Would you use the M word on this movie?
Which word?
The M word.
M word. Masterpiece?
Yes.
I wouldn't personally. Not quite for me, but I take it you would?
I might. Yeah. I might.
Okay. Well, let's get into it then. So masterpiece. Okay.
I might.
Okay. Is Heat a masterpiece?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
That I can agree with you on.
Michael Mann's second best movie, and I might even call Manhunter a third masterpiece as well.
Yeah.
That's where I would end I mean, I love Michael Mann, but
yeah. I mean, it does take a lot for me to say masterpiece for a film, which it should for anyone, I think.
Of course. I'm not throw that word around lightly.
Right, exactly. this one, I mean, this is coming off of, I mean, not even coming out. This is Russell Crowe right in his prime. This is him, I think, his first of 3 consecutive nominations for Best Actor.
His best performance? Is this your favorite performance of his or not?
Favorite/best.
Those are 2 different questions, I suppose.
Favorite what?
Favorite and best are 2 different questions.
Right. Yeah. My favorite, I gotta go with Maximus, you know, for Gladiator is my favorite, but this probably is his best. It's
totally, I don't see Russell Crowe. I see Jeffrey Wigand. I see, you know, him just playing this character who has this information and wants to get it out. Like, I feel everything he's doing, and it's not Russell Crowe. And that's what you want when you're watching a movie. You don't want to see the actor.
Because I do think that this is his best performance that he has ever given.
Yeah.
Probably ever will give. I just love everything about it. Every, like, you know, facial twitch. I mean, the way he walks or runs, or just everything about it is perfection. And I think that Gladiator, which is the only movie that he's won for, is actually the weakest of the three performances.
Okay.
Because I think he's great in A Beautiful Mind as well.
Oh, yeah. No, definitely. And it's funny because speaking of Beautiful Mind, you were just saying his facial expressions and everything. This time when I was watching it for the show, I was noticing some of the facial expressions he was making were exact same things he was doing in A Beautiful Mind. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, man, that must be like his kind of quirk that he does. Like, you know, he doesn't really maybe necessarily do it for the character, or maybe when he's doing like a more vulnerable character, he does it. Because he doesn't, like, I don't know. It's like he almost like puts his lips at the side of his mouth.
All actors have a little signature to them.
Yeah.
Look who he's acting opposite in this movie.
Al Pacino. Al Pacino. And, like,
you know, everybody's got their style, and
and
that's not to say that Russell Crowe isn't tremendous in Gladiator. I love what he does in you know, the next two movies.
Yeah, no, definitely.
I guess Insider was before.
He got nominated Insider, Gladiator, Beautiful Mind, great and amazing performances in all three. But yeah, I mean, I could totally see saying this. But yeah, I think, yeah, just favorite wise, I just go Maximus, just because
this guy,
I'm just hurrah.
Like, I think he's one of the best actors ever, first of all, Russell Crowe. But we're not even talking about LA Confidential or friggin' Cinderella Man, where he's great. There's so much.
Yeah, I mean, because this is 4 years after LA Confidential. Trying to think what happened before this, you know, beside or in between those movies.
Oh, he was doing stuff like Proof of Life,
Heaven's Burning, Breaking Up. Oh, Mystery Alaska, the hockey movie, came out the same year that this did. But yeah, Heaven's Burning. Yeah, that's about it. Yeah. But yeah, he's in a hockey movie too, folks. So there you have it.
All Russell Crowe can throw a phone at you and play defense.
Yes, that's what he does. That's his specialty.
All right. So he's incredible as Jeffrey Wigand, who to me was like such a hero. I mean, this guy gives up everything over the course of this movie. Loses his job, loses his family, loses his home, loses his sense of like security and safety. I mean, it's a great like paranoia, like conspiracy movie, even right. though never really like. I mean, there is courtroom stuff, but you know, I don't think of The Insider as like a courtroom movie.
No, yeah, no,
and there's no judge.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's no judge. It's just a deposition.
Right.
You know, which is weird. I was like, so who's in charge here? Like, who's facilitating at least? You know, there's like just the lady who's typing. Like, that's it. so I was just like, yeah, what's going on? I love when that guy goes off on the tobacco lawyer, you know, about.
One of the best lines in the movie.
Yeah, you're better at lines. What does he say?
Wipe that smoke off your face.
And that, again, I played the clip. Jeff said it, but I also played the clip.
We got rats. We got laughs. We got ups and downs.
Oh, man. So, yeah, I mean, essentially we have, you know, well, actually, let's start at the beginning. This starts with actually Al Pacino.
Riding with a hood over his head in the car.
Riding with a hood over his head, exactly. And we find out he works for 60 Minutes. And yeah, he starts talking to this sheik in the Middle East somewhere. And
played by Clifton Collins, no less.
Yes, exactly. Clifton Collins, who was in, obviously.
Wait, do I have that right?
I don't know. I can fact check. I'll fact check all day long.
Or my thing of Curtis.
Wait, shit. It's okay. It's okay.
Look it up.
I'm looking it up, bro. Cliff Curtis. Yeah, Cliff Curtis.
Okay, I knew. I was like, I was mixing it up with
Oh, Cliff Curtis. Okay.
Sunshine, right?
I did not realize that was him, actually. Now that I see him, I recognize him, and yeah, he's been in a bunch of things. And yeah, wow, I didn't realize that was him. So yeah, good on you.
Sorry, but I caught myself. That's
important. Well done. Well done.
Okay. So I love how that sort of opening exchange goes, even though you're also like, oh, I thought I was watching a movie about cigarettes. Like, what is this? But they have to establish. I like how they use the chic scenes to sort of establish that these guys call the shots.
Right.
That's how Mike Wallace and Lowell Bergman almost thought of themselves, right? That, like, you know, don't worry, CBS News, you know, we're the most profitable show. Everyone's going to get on board and go along with us. The Sheik's going to allow us to sit wherever the hell we want.
Right.
So they carried a certain amount of weight, and I think that's important to get across.
Absolutely. Yeah, you got to know, yeah, what quote-unquote power these guys have. And yeah, I love what, you know, Christopher Plummer and Al Pacino do in the scene. You know, you got Christopher Plummer who wants to sit where he wants to sit, and the one, you know, bodyguard guy's like, no, you gotta sit further away. And Christopher Plummer's like, you know, you think I got a gun, you know, attached to me?
You think,
like,
I am a 78-year-old assassin?
Yes. So brilliant. So brilliant. And actually, I think, you know, I
think I'm gonna karate him to death with this notebook.
We had karate him to death. We had actually decided on The Insider before the sad passing of Christopher Plummer. And did I know
we,
you had
we actually decided beforehand, huh?
Yes, yeah, right, yeah, we decided beforehand. And wow. Then yeah, you said you were excited to talk about it on our show, and you said something about Christopher Plummer. You think he should have won for this?
He's over... incredible in this,
yeah,
movie.
Yeah, I mean, he is.
Just like every time that he really gets to, like, go off on somebody, whether, yeah, it's like, you know, he finds out he's been edited and like, who told you had the right skills? Or, you know, like, even when he's with Don Hewitt and he, like, switches sides, he's like, you fucked up, Don.
Yeah. I know. I love that. Yeah. Cause at first he's, you know, siding with Don because, right, you know, he's, you know, kind of going against Al Pacino. Yeah. And yeah, so I mean, you got, yeah, a lot going on, you know, with this whole thing, because you got Jeffrey Wigand, played by Russell Crowe, who used to work for the tobacco company, is asked by Al Pacino to translate these documents, you know.
So it's such an interesting way into the story that, like, we're just looking for an expert to talk about burn rate on cigarettes, and, like, we just happened to pick the guy who, like, lost his job.
Right, yeah. Yeah, and then that knows everything. And I think the worst thing he could have done is say, I can't talk about this, because that, I think, intrigues Al Pacino more to go after him, because it's like, okay. Sure.
That's a great scene, too, done over facts. The way that that's directed by Michael Mann, I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, yeah, I can't talk right now. And then, yeah, he goes back with, you won't talk, you can't talk right now,
can't
or
talk,
you
won't
know,
talk, don't want to talk.
And yeah, he goes back with basically all three: I can't, won't, and don't want to. Yeah, because, yeah, he's got this, like, non-disclosure agreement he signed with the tobacco company, along with his severance and everything.
And you need to demonstrate that Lowell has that instinct for a story, that he, right, knows that this guy has something, he wants to say something, he just has to be made to feel comfortable to say it. And it's also why Lowell can go up to the town in Montana at the end and start looking around and seeing, you know, the antennas on the tops of cars, right?
Right.
And saying, oh, you're a geologist, but your hands are fine. And he knows it's the FBI in town, which means something big is happening, and it's the Unabomber.
So what was that? Let's go to that. What was that scene all about? Because it really didn't have anything to do with the...
Well, you got to move on. I mean, he had to move on from the Wigand story, right? Like, he'd taken it as far as he could, and now it's time... You know, the big thing at that time was the Unabomber.
Okay, so
it makes sense.
So he wasn't, that was just him trying to move on and be like, all right, let me go to my next story.
That's how it is just for everybody in journalism. Like, you know, yeah. you don't just get to keep working a story forever. Like, you got to move on to the next thing. And they actually set it up earlier in the movie because he's talking to the FBI guy. And the FBI guy's like, I have a goddamn Unabomber out here. You know? So it's like you sense that the FBI is actually moving in on the Unabomber. I thought it was great that he gets that scoop on the way out the door.
Yeah. He gets that. Yeah. Final thing where he's just like, yeah, I can't do this anymore. It's not the way it used to be. It's not, you know, how journalism should be, you know, right. I want to be out there telling the truth.
That moment, he loved, you know, the way that everybody looks at him, I think, you know, and congratulates him over that Unabomber thing. I think that that is the kind of thing that drives every journalist.
Yeah. Is that what drives you?
For sure. It's definitely not the money. I'll tell you that. I can make a lot more money doing a lot of other things. But.
Did this movie inspire you at all to become a journalist?
Maybe subconsciously. I mean, that's not why I went out to Los Angeles in the first place. I kind of just fell into journalism. But I definitely have a greater appreciation, I think, of this movie because I am a journalist. And because I recognize not just what, you know, Lowell Bergman goes through with his editors and, you know, trying to, you know, have different drafts or cuts of the interview, drafts of the story, whatever it is. I can appreciate what Weigand went through as a source who like laid his neck out on the line for public safety.
Right. And laid his family's safety on the line, laid his, obviously his reputation, but yeah, laid his family's life on the line, but also the life he's going to have with his family on the line.
The fact that his daughter has asthma, I don't think is any mistake. I don't know if that's a true thing or if that's an invention for the movie. But when you think about, you know, what smoking does, it's not just, you know, he's not just trying to save people's lives who are smoking the cigarettes, but, you know, the children that they may have who inherit the, you know, genetic problems like asthma, whatever it is. There's obviously a lot of complications that come from smoking cigarettes.
So. Yeah. Well, that's my thing is though, with this whole thing is, and maybe made it not a masterpiece to me is just because, but I know it's, you know, it's surrounded by deeper things about corporate controlling things and all that, but it's like people who smoke cigarettes know how bad it is for them, you know, and they're going to continue to do so. So, you know, going out and doing this because you think it's the right thing to do, I don't think it would have changed anyone who smokes cigarettes' minds.
Maybe, but it's tough to know that. I think that you're right, and it's sort of what they say in that first meeting where it's like, you know, blah blah blah, cigarettes are bad for you, like not exactly a fucking earth shattering
right.
story.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
but
they do
the
bring
fact
that up.
They're actively tinkering with it chemically to make it more addictive and to pass, like he says, through the blood-brain barrier, whereas normally, you know, smoking tobacco would not.
Yeah, that's true. Because you have these smokers who want to quit and are always trying to quit, but they can't. And yeah, you got a company who's making it even more addictive, which in turn makes it even harder to quit. That's wrong. You know, that is wrong. So yeah, good point.
I love not just like so the whistleblower elements, right? Which is the parent one. I love the email that he gets. You know, or the bullet in the mailbox, or the footprint in the garden. Like they're, it's almost like a very, you know, calculated campaign.
Yeah.
Error. Even the golf scene, which is directed so perfectly, and the music in this movie is incredible. It's the same woman who did Gladiator for Ridley Scott.
Oh, okay.
Lisa Gerrard, I believe.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole soundtrack is great, but it's an eerie music that's meant to kind of spook you during that golfing scene.
Right. No, yeah, it's great. And I It probably was in the middle of the night. I was just thinking, like, what golf range is open in the middle of the night? That's pretty cool, but creepy at the same time. Okay. But yeah, I mean, obviously you have these people from the tobacco company who are, you know, trying to intimidate him. Somehow they find out that he met with Al Pacino eventually about these documents that
Al Pacino got. How do you think that they know this? Do you think that it's the room service person? Which is kind of implied. But really, anybody could have seen him.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah. Because they knock and he specifically says, oh, they don't knock, you know, only room service knocks or something.
Right.
And yeah, that's true. Yeah, he was the only person. But yeah, because why else would they be following him unless they suspected that he might talk?
Yeah.
Yeah, so
I suppose that is a little unclear.
Yeah, but in any case, they do
right,
seem to find out. They seem to find out that, you know, he did talk to a journalist, and they, you know, kind of remind him about the disclosure agreement. But they, you know, always started off with, oh, he's a great golfer. You know, they're you know, warming him up and stuff.
They wanted to amend the agreement, right, and make it a lot and have it cover a lot more.
Right. I was thinking, like, can they do that? Like, didn't he already sign it? Like, why would he have to sign anything else?
That's the thing. These companies always have the power.
Right, yeah, the loopholes they can pull and everything like
and
that.
Right, you know, he's pretty combatant because he takes everything as, like, a threat. And he's like, you know, fuck me, fuck you.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I like how he's not really a pushover in this.
Yeah.
In this, like,
he's a gun owner. He sparred with the judo team.
Right.
He comes after the guy with the golf club. I mean, he is kind of like a crazy maniac, which is obviously something that I like in a person.
Well, naturally, I mean, come on, you're
that would be me.
Yeah,
I don't have a gun, but I would chase after somebody with a golf club. I'm from Boston, after all.
You're the Insider. Is that from this movie, The Insider? Did you think of it because of that?
No, but I am honored to have it come so close to that title.
All right, well, let's just say it is.
it's all about you, Michael Mann. He pinched my cheek once.
Did he?
He did.
Where?
It was at a screening. I don't know.
Which cheek?
I think it was
this face cheek. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yes, my face.
Face. Okay. Just making sure. You know, it was before
me. I think I fanboyed out over him, and he was like, "Ah, yes, yeah.
you,
great guy."
Good. I'm glad he pinched your cheek. I hope to get my cheek pinched one of these days.
I'll pinch
by anyone.
just touch me.
Yes, please. Human connection, please. But yeah, you know, they threaten to alter the non-disclosure agreement, and this kind of causes him to seems like it fuels him to want to talk more, because I think after this his daughter hears something in the backyard, and that's when he goes out with the gun and stuff, and right. Then he calls Lowell. And he comes and gets, like, security detail and everything for him.
I like when the bullet comes in the mailbox and then it becomes serious. It's like, Jeff, call the FBI.
Yeah.
Jeff, call the FBI.
Right. Yeah, because I, you know, when you're watching this, you, like, keep thinking, like, Al Pacino is just going to protect him. And I'm like, wait, he's just a journalist. Right. Like, he's just a reporter. Like, at this point, yeah, he's like, call the police. Like, what do you want me to do? But, yeah, I mean, it's, yeah, the FBI, though, is right away.
What do you
away,
think of the, like, wife? What do you think of Mrs. Wygant?
She's cool. She's really cool. Now, she's... Oh, freaking, it's,
what's Diane, Diane Venora from Heat.
No. Right? It is Diane. Why did I think this was, that's crazy. I thought this was, Jessica Lange.
Oh, no.
Wow. Holy crap.
It does look and sound like Jessica Lange.
Yeah, okay.
Jessica Lange, but Jessica Lange, I think, was a little older.
Yeah, that's true. That's why I was like so weirded out. Okay, wow, that makes so much more sense. Yeah, yeah. Guess I should have done more research. But yeah, I mean, she was, you know, I want to say the voice of reason, but there was no controlling him really. I think she was just really right. Just creeped out by the whole situation and just...
He definitely, you know, made decisions on his own. They didn't like do a lot of talking. Like when he's bringing her to New York and... She like doesn't know he's there for the interview. Like, how do you know?
Right.
You didn't tell her. He's like, I tried. I couldn't. I didn't try. Like,
what are you gonna do?
Do you know what these people are gonna do to us? I think she's good. I think she is she is that voice of reason. She is the rational family woman who's just trying to protect her children and you know, their home. Like, I raised my girls in this home. She didn't want to.
Right.
What? You know, she's sort of become like a pariah.
Right. Well, and I love how they move out of their home and they move into a home that still has this beautiful yard and it's still a house that's bigger than mine. But it's a downgrade for them, you know. it's like okay, I guess in Kentucky it's a downgrade.
$300,000 or $400,000 a year probably at Brown Williams.
Right, exactly. So what's the deal with the FBI like taking his stuff, like where and like kind of being suspicious of him?
I think they have to, you know, if you get a death threat, yeah, they're going to have to take the computer and look into it and see if they can figure out, trace it and see who sent it. No.
Yeah.
I didn't think that was so wild. And he's like, I got everything. You know, he's like, I love how he sort of falls down the hill chasing after them. And he's like this defeated man and all of his neighbors are outside looking at him. And it's a very embarrassing situation. But yeah, I don't know what he was expecting in that moment. Of course, right. I know about the guns in your safe, bro. Like,
yeah. So yeah, he does the interview, which he knows they're not going to air until they, you know, get his testimony in Mississippi, which they were kind of saying how if he gets it on record, it kind of bypasses the non-disclosure agreement. Right. So I assume you can say something in court.
If you're compelled to say something legally, is called a witness, right?
Yeah.
Then yeah, it supersedes any NDA, I guess. I love that whole scene though. Like the pomp and circumstance in leading up to him, like making the decision, all right, I'm going to testify. Let's go to court. 18,000 cop cars and motorcycles are like, we've got the insider here. Like, look at him. you know, a zillion media show up. No one even knows what they're there for, by the way. Everyone's like, what's going on in there? Al Pacino's like, I don't know.
I don't know. I know as much as you do.
And then, the lawyer who's like, you know, that means you don't talk.
Yep. So yeah, he does the interview and then he does the testimony down in Mississippi, which he finds out then he has a gag order, which essentially makes it so he can't go back to Kentucky.
Which he does and he's fine.
Yeah, exactly. Like, so it's like, what was the point? But I think this is around the time when CBS Corporate comes in and is basically like, we're a third party who's basically telling this guy to violate his non-disclosure agreement.
Tortious interference.
Right. And so, yeah, we can, you know, we're the ones that are going to get sued. So I like the kind of juxtaposition kind of how corporate is always going to get in the way and is always going to overpower kind of the right thing to do. You got corporate tobacco and then you got corporate news. They're controlling the narrative.
Well, it's like Pacino says, like, okay, you know, we're a news organization. People are always telling us things that they shouldn't.
Right.
It doesn't mean that we've induced them to breach their contract. They've just done it. Like, why are we on the hook for their decision?
Right.
You know, I don't know if they could prove in this case that it was a little bit more than that. It was a little bit more of a dance, right, between Wigand and Lowell. But I do love the corporate scenes. And you know, I think Gina Gershon is like that perfect sort of steely corporate, for the lack of a better word, bitch. and then her lackey, Stephen Tobolowsky.
Yep.
Which, like, he's just going along with corporate, right? Because yep. He's got $1 million on the line in the event of a sale, or several million on the line.
And he was just on Blockbuster Mentality, folks, talking Mr. Yes, had him on the show. It's out there in the ether. What was that?
Did you guys talk about this movie at all?
No, I think he might have mentioned something insider, but we talked Groundhog Day, Memento, Spaceballs a little bit. The movie we talked about was Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. But yeah, he's very
old classic.
Yeah, very old classic. But yeah, he's very knowledgeable film guy. So yeah, it was a treat talking with him. But yeah, he has a little small role in this as the lawyer dude.
I love the journalism bar where everybody hangs out too, where Pacino runs into the editor at the Wall Street Journal, who's talking to the guy at the time. And it's just like, those are the days. I don't know if that was supposed to be Elaine's in New York or not, because I know Elaine's is a hot spot for writers. But
yeah. Well, it's funny that everyone knows a little bit about something that everyone's doing. Like, oh, I hear you got this story here, and I hear you, you know, sitting on something over here. Like, they all know a little bit of what's.
Yeah.
Does that happen in film? Journalism.
Are definitely times I call my competitors my rivals, and it's like, oh, I heard this, but I you know, I'm sworn to secrecy, or I can't go with this. Why don't you go with it? Can you email this person? You know, so that person will be like, oh man, you know, this other reporter has been holding that story. Now Snyder's sniffing around on it. I got to just give it to this other reporter so they can finally go with it.
Yeah.
You know,
we get each other
assists every now and then, but I'm sworn to secrecy on those events. And
hey, you know, non-disclosure agreements, you know, they'll get you every time.
Always take money, though. I mean, to me, I always take the severance and sign whenever they want, because
why not? You know,
they're going to come after me for the money. Give me a break.
Can't get blood out of a turnip, as my dad would say. That's such an old man saying. You got the CBS corporate sniffing around, and then yeah, that's when Philip Baker Hall and Christopher Plummer are, you know, kind of strong arming Al Pacino and saying, yeah, we can't run with it. You know, it's not worth it. It's not worth the risk of a multi-billion-dollar lawsuit against us. So, you know, Al Pacino's kind of on his own, and they end up not airing the interview segment. They you know, tell the story, but they don't say who the source is or anything like that. And basically this is after Russell Crowe finds out that his family left him after all this and all that, and he's basically saying, like, to Al Pacino, you manipulated me, like, what, you know,
right? I love that he goes back to the hotel room where they met, right? Which is right across from Brown and Williamson. And
right.
And he's like, you know what I'm looking at right now? Like Brown and Williamson, and it's totally dark except for the 10th floor. That's where they fuck with my life.
Yep. Yeah, because you see him a couple times before that scene looking in this office building, and you're like, oh, what's going on there? Yep. And then, yeah, you find that out. What's happening? Is he drunk or something? What's happening when he gets those visions of his daughter in the yard?
I would imagine that he is drunk. But yeah, I mean, I think he's just, his whole life is flashing before his eyes. Like, given the gravity of this decision and what it's cost him, and how it's ultimately it's not going to air.
Right.
You know that.
And, not. Yeah. And yeah, he has that intense conversation on the phone with Al Pacino about manipulating me. And Al Pacino's like, no, I'm trying to protect you. Like, this isn't, you know, cause Al Pacino's all about, you know, just telling the truth, you know, getting the word out there, letting the public know what's going on.
This movie definitely makes Lowell Bergman look like an amazing guy.
Yes, definitely. You get this dossier, this 500-page dossier that has all this dirt on Wygand.
Right.
Yep.
He left his first wife, who went when she got MS, which is kind of cold and fucked up. But like, I get And then he had a daughter with her, and they never said what happened to the first daughter. I guess right. They're totally estranged, and he's like a deadbeat dad.
But, you know, in that him and his current wife have had altercations before, and
he's a shoplifter.
Shoplifter, exactly.
It was an accident.
Yep. So that's when Al Pacino goes to the guy at the Wall Street Journal and is like, hey, can you, you know, push your deadline? Because they're going to run with the story about him to discredit, you know, what right. he said. And, you know, he's like, I can't push my deadline. So he's just like, all right. And then Al Pacino goes out and
he gets that third party, though, it's a man, a woman, and he hires them and they do their third party review. And they're the ones who go and interview like the cop who arrested him.
Yeah.
And they, you know, basically write a retort to this dossier, and
yeah,
the Wall Street Journal like runs with that, and they say this was a smear campaign.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Because yeah, I mean, they're contradicting what this dossier says, so they can't, you know,
not exactly a bastion of liberal values.
Exactly. Yep. And he's totally right.
So he gets that piece first, right, in the Wall Street Journal. Then he goes to the Times, and he gets the Times, right. gives the Times the play by play, the blow by blow of what happened inside the CBS News versus CBS corporate, you know, that thing. Mike right. Wallace is like totally humiliated. You know, I think that's a great scene where he comes to the hotel room at like 6 a.m. or whatever, 5:30 a.m. with the paper. And he's like, you know, it's all about legacy. You know, like, you know, I'm at the end of my career. It's all about what legacy you leave behind. And like, this is bullshit.
Right. Yeah. Because he's like, you know, I can't look to the future at this point in my life. You right. know, it's, you know, all about, yeah, like you said, legacy. And it's, you know, if I'm, you know, I forget what exactly he says. Like, if I'm a 30-year-old guy, yeah, I can look into the future and what I still can do. But no, at this point in my career, like, yeah, it's all
going to toil away on national public radio.
Right. And, was that before or after his stuff gets cut? Like he's like comes into Pacino's office.
I think it's actually after.
Okay, yeah, because he comes into Pacino's office all bragging about this 3-minute segment he did and like how great he was during it. And then, yeah, they cut most of it. And yeah, he just kind of goes off.
Cut the guts out of what I said.
Yep. And yeah, so yeah, it's great moments with the great Christopher Plummer doing great stuff and Al Pacino. And yeah, so yeah, finally they're able to. They do air it,
and that's the moment where this movie becomes a masterpiece to me. Okay, because I've seen it I don't even know how many times I've seen this movie. 25 times. It's still
1,000 or 25?
Probably 25. I was gonna say 1,000. I was like, wow, that would be a lot of times. Probably 25 times watching The Insider, which is no joke, and it still gets me. It still makes me tear up and cry. When you hear the ticking come on and you just see that snippet that's played again, which is to me the whole moment of the film where he says, you know, you ask me, you know, would I do it again? Do I think it's worth it? Yeah, I think it's
worth
it. And he looks at his little girls and like just that to me is the moment where the whole movie comes together and it becomes it takes it to another level.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, it's yeah, such a great moment because yeah, he finally gets his daughters to see, you know, what he's saying and what he did, and you know, he the
music rises its soul.
Yeah,
and it's like you know no
That's 100%. I thought the music was playing just now.
How many of your listeners just stopped? They're like, that's enough of that.
They're like, all right, I won't hear your ad.
It is incredible.
It really is. Yeah, great, great music. And then, yeah, Al Pacino says he's going to quit because he's had it. You know, he's had it. But
what got broken here can never be fixed. By the way, I didn't even get to do the line.
Do the line. I'm not done. You do it. I'm just kind of going through here.
Where he's, you know, he's in a meeting with Wallace and Hewitt, and he goes, the cat
totally out of the bag.
Yes.
Like that might be my favorite line.
Well, it's great too because yeah, that what is happening at that moment? So yeah, the cat's out of the bag. What was he saying that about?
Well, it's just like, well, why aren't we wearing like doing the interview? Like everybody knows about this now,
right? Yeah. So it's like yeah, the cat's totally out of the bag. Yeah, and that's again, yeah, this movie totally speaks on just like the strength corporate has. And I love the point they bring out about how tobacco, if you go after them, they'll just legal you to death. You know, they spend, you know, they spend billions of dollars a year on legal. And
we don't know. We take a bunch of leaves, roll them up. You light it up. You smoke them.
Yeah.
We don't know.
And that Congress scene they keep showing about them saying, you know, nicotine's not, you know, we don't know, it's not addictive. It's not addictive. Is that a real? Was that a real shot of that? Do you know?
I don't think so because that's like actors. That's Michael Gambon, right?
Oh, okay.
Maybe there was that moment where the seven CEO actually did that, but like I don't think of that.
Oh yeah, that is Michael Gambon. You're right. Yeah,
footage in the actual movie.
Yeah. And Rip Torn is in this for like 2 seconds.
Is he? Wow.
Yeah. I just recognize his voice. I feel like they'd barely even showed him. I forget exactly. He played John Scanlon. What did he do in this movie? I just watched it last night.
Nicotine is not addictive.
Man, you're just full of impressions. I love it. Yeah, Rip Torn. He's
I saw him in the credits, but yeah, I was like, who does he play again?
Yeah, I forget. Some guy, you know, just some guy. Obviously not important, but yeah, and then you got the walk away at the end with Al Pacino after seeing his 60-minute Unabomber segment go off and telling Christopher Plummer he quits. And I like the look they kind of give each other. You know, he kind of walks away and Christopher Plummer looks back and sees Al Pacino look back, and you know, they had the nice 14 years together, you know, but it's time for Pacino to move on. Maybe he'll start his own, you know, news firm or something.
He went on to Frontline, to the PBS show. He became a big producer on that.
Oh yeah, that's right, I forgot.
And then Wygan becomes Teacher of the Year.
Yep, that's right. Yeah, goes from making who knows how much money at the tobacco company to being a high school chemistry teacher and Japanese.
Like a good teacher, and in fact, watching this movie made me want a Russell Crowe as a badass teacher movie.
Yeah, it made me want him to start cooking crystal meth after he receives his cancer diagnosis.
Oh, a little. Oh, I could see that. A Russell Crowe style, like a Breaking Bad style show with Russell Crowe.
Exactly. Yep. And he was actually a second choice to Bryan Cranston. They were going to call him up.
Did you see Unhinged?
No.
I really liked Unhinged, which came out last summer. Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
With Russell Crowe?
Yeah, the road rage movie.
Oh, yeah. No, I have not seen that. It was good, huh?
Oh, I had a very good time with that movie.
All right. I'll check it out. What's your favorite journalist movie?
I think it's this movie.
Besides this movie.
I love Shattered Glass.
Shattered Glass. Okay. That's a good one.
I mean, Spotlight is great. I know I'm supposed to say All the President's Men, but you know, I like a little bit newer movies. Yeah. I think it's those two. Spotlight.
Okay. Yeah. Spotlight definitely comes to mind. Network. I mean, that's not really, that's just about a guy kind of going crazy and will not take it anymore. That's not really journalism, but yeah, Spotlight definitely comes to mind. Should it have won Best Picture? I don't think so, but you know, that's just me.
Do you know who plays Jeffrey Wigand, one of Jeffrey Wigand's daughters in this movie?
Oh my goodness, she's so familiar. She was in that bird movie, Polly or whatever, with the with Jay Moore.
Do you know whose sister she is?
I do not.
That is Jesse Eisenberg's sister, Hallie Eisenberg.
Get out of here.
She was in those Pepsi commercials as a little girl.
Well, yeah, yeah. She was in the Pepsi commercials. She was in Pauly with Jay Moore, the critically acclaimed bird movie. Okay, I did not know that was Jesse Eisenberg's sister. Is she older than him? Or is she younger?
That's a good question. I'm actually not sure about that.
Okay. Well, thank you for not being an expert on Jesse Eisenberg's family.
Did you catch the cameo from Breckenmeyer?
People tell me sometimes.
Travis from Clueless, the skater.
No, I know who Breckenmeyer is. Okay. Who was he an Insider?
He was like I think it's Wigand's son's friend. Or no, maybe it's Bergman's son's friend. Sorry, it's Bergman.
Oh yes, I remember. Yeah, I remember seeing him last night. At first, I thought it was is Breckenmeyer not from Road Trip? One of the Myers.
Yes,
that is him. Yeah, I remember seeing him last night when I was watching him, and I was like, oh, I forgot he was in this. And then I
inverted my names there. I did a name inversion. So yes, Bergman's son's friend. Who else was in that, man?
Okay. Rip Torn. Did I mention Rip Torn?
I did. Rip Torn.
I know. Steven Tobolowsky. He was on Blockbuster Mentality. Check it out.
Lynn Bigpen, the chief from Carmen Sandiego.
She's the
principal who hires Wigand.
When I was watching, I should have took notes, but obviously I didn't. I was going to mention, did you notice who that was? And
I really like Debbie Mazar here and Colm Feore, who was Scruggs. He was good. Lindsay Krause. This is a good
one. I kept thinking him, the Debbie Mazar character, I kept thinking him and Al Pacino had something going on. I don't know. The way they kept looking at each other, the characters anyways, maybe the real life people too. I don't know. But the way they kept looking at each other, like I always expect something to happen there, but it didn't. That's not what this movie's about. You know, it's about journalism, but hell of a movie. What was that?
What am I supposed to tell the next source? Hang in with me. You'll be okay. Maybe. that was not the quote, but it was an approximation.
Jesse Eisenberg's sister is Haley Eisenberg. She was born in 92. Jesse Eisenberg is eight in the 80s, I think. So yeah, she's younger. So wow, I had no idea that was his sister. So learn something new every day. She was also in Bicentennial Man.
Yeah. But she doesn't act anymore, does she?
Last thing she was in was in 2010, so I assume not.
She's out.
Good for her. Way to escape. Child actress. She got out. She got out of the industry. Good for her. Good for her. But yeah, that's Insider. That was Insider with the Insider.
Michael Mann, Eric Roth. I mean, we got to hand it to them.
Yeah. It's definitely. If you like being on the edge of your seat, being on just you like that kind of investigative journalism type thing, it's a very intriguing watch. We gave it all away, but it's based on The Man Who Knew Too Much, which makes me think.
Give it all away. There's plenty more to take away from this movie.
Yeah, that is true.
I still take away stuff on my 25th viewing where I can just appreciate little details. And
right. Like yeah. Nominated Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actor, Russell Crowe, Best Screenplay, Best Cinematography, Best.
Pacino and Plummer not get nominated.
I know. Especially Plummer. Well, even Pacino. Right. Yeah.
I get it if Russell Crowe's going to be the guy, right? And Best Actor. Okay. Pacino, it's hard to run him in supporting, I think, although maybe you could. But Plummer's a clear supporting, and that should have been a nomination.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, definitely. And even Golden Globes, they didn't get nominated. It was just Russell Crowe. Best Sound got nominated for as well. Best Film Editing.
Also a Disney movie.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw Buena Vista.
Yeah, the Buena Vista title. And so I wonder if they just didn't really know how to get this movie an Oscar or something. I mean, they got 7 Oscar nominations, but they were up against DreamWorks that year, and DreamWorks was just unstoppable around that time.
Was that Shrek? Did that come out in 99, probably?
I think so. I don't know.
Come on, Schmodown guy.
Like a champion? Is that what it looked like?
No, I was just gonna say, you just turned, I see a belt that says champion, so yes you look like a champion. But yeah, insider, there we go. Boom, Bobby, it's been great talking with you, man. Say something quirky.
Thank you for having me here on Blockbuster Mentality. You can follow me on Twitter, Instagram, Cameo at the Insnyder. If you order a Cameo, order it on the website, not the app. Thanks. All right, good night.
All right, buddy. Talk to you later. Well, there you have it. The Insnyder. Great conversation once again with my man Jeff. And yeah, hopefully he'll be back soon. Hey, make sure you're following us on Twitter at BlockbusterCast, on Instagram at Blockbuster Mentality. That's where you get all the updates for new shows that are coming out. We just guested on Gutting a Sacred Cow. Definitely check them out. They kind of have a guest tear apart a beloved film. Make sure you're subscribed to them too, because me and Dave just guested on their show and it was a blast. I'm not gonna say what movie it is. I'm gonna leave it for a surprise. But yeah, make sure you check out their podcast and that episode when it drops. We have them coming up on our show. We have comedian Greg Fitzsimmons coming up and some others on the horizon. So look forward to sharing it with you all. So all right, but that is it for me, folks. For Jeff, I'm Ben, and as always, grab some popcorn, grab some snacks. We'll catch you guys at the movies.